Welcome to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. Dr. Levine is a doctor of internal medicine and is ready to take your calls at 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI. You can listen to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on the air, online at KLVI.com, or on your phone with the free iHeartRadio app. Now, here's Dr. Levine.
Diaz or bonjour is the last one I have learned over the past 2 weeks. This is the Dr. Levine's Medical Hour. This is Dr. Japera Levine. As Dr. Levine has informed, we're trying to do a little something different with the content of the show. And as I know that he announced last week, I would be here this week to answer any medical questions you have related to the foot or ankle. I am a podiatrist here, do foot and ankle surgery, as well as see anything related to the foot or ankle, anything whatsoever in my office. It is a pleasure to be here, as always. And as the prompt stated, you can call and ask questions at 896-KLVI or 5584. Or our iHeartRadio listeners, we welcome you. This is a patient-driven show. And we welcome as many callers and questions as you could possibly have. As Dr. Levine likes to say, all copays are waived. And at this time of year, there are no deductibles. I don't know if you all have been to the physician earlier this year, but I have, even in this past week, the deductible is always an issue at this time of year, the amount of money you must pay out of pocket. So please feel free to call up here, and we are open and live awaiting your calls. As always, I am taking new patients, and we are located on the actual campus of Baptist Hospital. The actual address is 3070 College, and the number, which is easy to remember, 833-FOOT. Can't forget it. We always take new patients, and a lot of times same-day appointments. And I'd like to also give thanks to Ms. Charlotte, who I just spoke with, my sister-in-law, Dr. Levine, for allowing me to do this, both my mom and dad, and all those who've helped me start a practice here in Beaumont, where we both were born and raised. Both went to Westbrook High School. And, you know, a blessing is, which I can say is I've been open for 1 year. Praise the Lord. And it is always good to reflect on all the great things that have happened over the past year. As stated, both Dr. Levine and I were born here and raised here, and I actually went to the University of Texas, so I know that Dr. Levine, he graduated from Rice, and we are definitely here to help you, and we consider it a pleasure to actually be able to be here and provide you with information based on the information that we know to be of service to this community, and that is always a blessing to be able to come back and be of service to those who actually helped raise us, okay? As Dr. Levine, I think, mentioned last week, at least according to my mother, was he mentioned I went on vacation, and I am very well rested. It was one that was necessary. It was a very spiritual experience, and I'm glad that I was able to go and reflect and do reading. I had several journals from the Foot and Ankle International, from foot and ankle surgery to read and catch up on in order to be better with my patients and to know what's new out there, what has advanced technologies, what we can do and offer to patients who walk in my door. And it was purely a wonderful experience. As Dr. Levine likes to say, it is crisp outside, and it is definitely crisp. This morning, it is something that we, even though it is crisp, that you want to obviously get out and do some sort of physical activity and be moving. And I always say 20 minutes, but Dr. Levine, I think, says, 40. Anywhere in between there is great. Get the heart rate pumping, get the blood flowing, warm those tissues, and get moving, especially I know in the new year. Even at the gym I go to, it is packed everyone, a lot of people have the New Year's resolution to lose weight. And honey, it does not matter when you lose it. If it makes you feel better, do it. It does not matter what time of year it is. Please get out and be active. And I have to tell you a personal story, which I know Dr. Levine likes to talk about, the foods that we eat and food being medicinal. I would like to tell you, since I was on vacation and I was not in the country, there are not foods that we normally eat here, which I always talk about, fried, and mo-fried. I did not eat those foods, and I can tell you by the time I got back, I craved a hamburger. During my vacation, typically the things that we eat were very fresh and a lot of fruits and vegetables. And when I got back, ate a hamburger, and let me tell you something, woke up and felt horrible the next day. So it definitely impresses upon me, although something may taste good, it's not good for you. And it's not good for the body. So please take a word of advice. As I tell my patients, you either pay for it now or you're going to pay for it later. And paying for it later is in the form of doctor's visits, medicines, co-pays. You will pay for it because the body will begin to adapt and adjust based on your lifestyle. So with the fact that the weather is crisp outside today, the topic that I would like to discuss or bring up would be conditions that walk into my office, or rather conditions that hobble into my office when the temperature drops, okay? And a lot of times during this time of year, especially during this week, I tell my patients, all those who walk in my office, I'm like, look, you're going to hurt this time of year. And the reason is because of the change in temperature. And so during this type of year, because of the drop in temperature and a lot of times it rains, a lot of my patients walk in with severe symptoms of arthritis. You know, one of those things that I like to call old Arthur. Arthritis, if you, one of those things that definitely walks into my office a lot are, you know, if you break down the word arthritis, the root word arthro, it means joint. Anytime you add ITIS onto any word, it means an inflammatory response, a reaction, actually. And actually, the joint, as I tell my patients all the time, must stay at a certain temperature and a certain pressure. That joint, essentially, which is a space between two bones, allows it to move fluidly, just like WD-40 that you put in one of your doors or one of your open crickety cracks. And it provides that smooth gliding motion that we like to have. And when something happens to change that consistency of the joint, it begins to bother us. In that joint, there is a cap on the edge of every bone that we like to call cartilage. That cap essentially protects the edge of the bone. And in that cap, there is a lot of good vascularity, good vessels, good nerves. And you have to understand, when that cap is worn away, those nerves are going real. They're like, hey, we're exposed now. And because of that, that provides your body with that protection is just now gone. And so you can feel those issues now more so. Also in that joint, in addition to the cartilage, and understand cartilage is something that is a very specialized tissue that takes a lot to regenerate, if it regenerates at all. So the Lord gave you one cap of cartilage, and a lot of times that's all you get. So because a lot of times people have issues with cartilage degeneration or it being worn away or some traumatic incident, a lot of times we cannot regenerate that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Actually, that joint also has what's called a fluid. In that fluid, there's all kinds of great things that moisturize the joint. That fluid in the joint must stay at a certain temperature and a certain pressure. So that temperature and that pressure are going to be affected by the outside temperature and pressure. Any joints that have had an issue, such as any trauma, any car accidents, anything that's been involved in a surgical procedure, anything that has had any sort of traumatic event that's become exposed, are now exposed to the environment, will suffer, they'll cause you pain. So that joint, when the temperature drops low or the barometric pressure, which is right before it rains, you will begin to feel it hum, okay? And so a lot of my patients this week have walked in, or like I said, hobbled in with, oh my God, Levine, I'm in so much pain. Like, what's going on? And I have to let them know, I'm like, you have to understand that any joints that have been through some sort of issue or some sort of damage which has been compromised will undergo changes. And just have to understand that the, you know, although I talk about the temperature, anything that talks about the weather that changes, a lot of my patients who, especially when I lived up north, we call them snowbirds, people who live in the south, people who live up north, but they actually vacation in a warmer climate during the winter months. They move to areas where the barometric pressure stays consistent. Doesn't rain a lot, the temperature doesn't drop, and they feel much better. And so understand that that plays a part into a lot of the aches and pains that some of my patients are dealing with this time of year. With that being said, some of the things that we diagnose or how we diagnose arthritis, or what I like to call old Arthur, is you want to go into your healthcare professional and, you know, get an exam. You know, sometimes just a conversation about how these start, what happened, how it led to this point can give a lot of information as to what we're dealing with. A physical exam, which is something I always try to do, and as any healthcare professional should do, which, you know, diagnose, okay, well, where does it hurt, how often, and when, and what does it feel like? You know, every ache and pain is different. And so understand that the physical exam is going to be your number one concern or characteristic of diagnosing. And then, you know, obviously imaging. A lot of times, and I'll definitely send almost all of my patients with any aches and pains to have some sort of imaging done in the form of an x-ray, an MRI, or what we like to call a CT. Now, understand, I always get x-rays first. And a lot of times the joint, there's not going to be a large amount of information that comes up on an x-ray. And I'll tell you why. An x-ray is something that shows only bone. Unless there are other issues going on in the actual pathology or tissues of the body, you typically do not appreciate them on a plain film, is what I like to say, or an x-ray. So when we get an x-ray, we like to look at the size and shape of a joint, okay? Now, joints can, or they're supposed to have, like I said, a gliding mechanism. So anything which causes spurs, or you see what we call joint meis, that's actually a word, which are essentially pieces of bone or islands of bone that are now floating in the actual joint. You can see those and appreciate those. The joint you want to appreciate, is it wide? Is it narrow? And if it is narrow, where is it narrow? A lot of times we, when we look at films, and I like to go over each and every one of the films with my patients when they come in, I want you to see what's actually going on in your body. I want you to be able to appreciate it and visually appreciate it. Because a lot of us in within our own right are visual learners. And with that, you want to make sure that you can actually see the joint and appreciate it. A lot of times it gets narrow at the edges, at the outsides of the joint. And understand, the more bone that you have in a joint that's supposed to be wide open, the more it grinds, okay? And a lot of times my patients come in and they feel like, oh, my God, it's like grinding. I can feel as if it's, you know, it's an issue with it moving, or it's kind of like frozen sometimes. And understand that some of those spurs come from wear and tear. Some of them come from trauma. I like to tell my patients, trauma is also surgically induced. Although surgery is a beneficial component in a lot of the things that we go into the doctor's office for, it is also a traumatic experience to the actual body. You're going in and you're opening up an orifice that is normally supposed to be closed and contained. And so understand that surgical procedures will a lot of times expose a joint in a very controlled manner, in a very positive manner. However, it is violation to an area that is supposed to remain closed. So with that, we get imaging and we look at it. And I like to look at the shape of the joint, and like I also said, the narrowing of a joint. And as I mentioned before, that cartilage or that cap, if you have a decreased space or area of movement, that cap will become worn away. It will just completely grind off. You know, I open a lot of my patients in the operating room, and you always want to take a look at the joint because, you know, you go and you fix something that may be bony related, and then the joint is damaged. And unless you address that, the patient will be in pain afterwards. So one thing that I know and like to do, which we'll get into a little later, is we'll talk about some ways to replenish some cartilage in the event that you have a surgical procedure. But, you know, with the imaging, we always like to take a look at where it's narrowed. We always like to evaluate that joint. And another way to diagnose actual arthritis is an injection. You know, some of my patients, they come in, they're like, oh, I don't want an injection. And, you know, with that, I do know, and I tell my patients, I'm like, look, right now you're going to hate me because most people don't like needles. You're going to love me when you walk out of here because you're not going to feel it. You're going to hate me in about 2 hours because the anesthetic wears off, and then you're going to love me for some time, okay? So it's a process. And understand that when you inject a joint, what it is as far as diagnosing is if you have pain relief after injecting the joint, then you know that that's the problem. And so that's a lot of times diagnostic for us so that we know that, okay, well, in the event that this is a problem and we can alleviate it, then we know that we may need to fix it down the line. With that being said, you want to always consider, too, that a lot of patients are wary of injections because they may have had one before and it was very painful. And they may have had a bad experience or heard of a bad experience, you know, with that. And so you want to keep that in mind that in most injections, at least, you know, there's always an anesthetic, which is a numbing medication or numbing component. And there is also a steroid of some sort. And steroids can be a number of things. They can be dexamethasone. It can be cortisone. It can be a whole host of things. There's all kinds of steroids on the market. And you have to understand, a lot of my patients also come in and they're nervous because they're like, look, I don't want to develop anything abnormal because I'm getting a steroid, or even my ladies. And I'm like, ma'am, this is a localized injection. There's nothing to be leery or wary about in relation to this. Well, I want to take a break now because I know Dr. Levine always tells me to prepare. Do not forget to take your break. So let's go ahead and pay the bills and we will be right back.
First, you're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
And welcome back. I always like to listen to some of the music during the break and when they bring us back in. So please forgive me. As we were coming, we like to welcome back all our listeners on the iHeartRadio. And any questions that you may have, please call us. We are always open to listen to what you have to say. As like Dr. Levine says, a lot of times we are limited in the office. And in this venture, in this venue, you can speak freely. And we have as much time as possible. At least until 9 a.m. Please feel free to give us a call, and we will be able to talk to you about whatever is on your mind related to foot and ankle, that is. So we're going to go ahead and finish our conversation about what I like to call old Arthur, or what a lot of patients come in and say they're hurting, and they're in this, you know, just pain during this time of year. And a lot of times it's due to the temperature and barometric pressure, especially here in Southeast Texas, where we know it is humid consistently in the summer. But as I was stating that, giving an injection, which a lot of my patients have a fear about, is something that can be diagnostic as well as therapeutic. So in my office, we tend to give injections as a way to find out if we can eliminate some of your symptoms and obviously your chief concern. And as I stated, the injection in most of them have sometimes one, if not two, steroids to actually alleviate the inflammation. Because you have to understand, and what's another issue involved in joints is an inflammatory reaction. As I stated earlier, anytime you add ITIS onto any word, it's typically in the medical literature, it means an inflammatory reaction. And the steroid is an anti-inflammatory that we use a lot. So I like to tell my patients, we're getting the medication we need to the area right now. And that's what a lot of times will sway patients, because they want to be pain-free. They want to be able to go about and, you know, live their lifestyle without things controlling them. And a lot of times that's a deciding factor in my patients. And I have this conversation with them about whether or not they want to actually do something invasive or surgically about a condition. And I was like, honey, if it's controlling you, you need to do something about it. So keep that in mind when you go into the physician, that you always want to make sure that you know what's being injected into your body. A lot of my patients come in and they say, you know what, I got an injection. And I'm like, well, what did you get? I don't know. I'm like, well, how do we know it didn't work, or how do we know it didn't help? Because a lot of times every steroid's different, just like every medication is different. Also, different local anesthetics are different. Some are short-acting, some are long-acting. So you want to know what is actually going inside the body when you receive an injection. So as we, you know, we talked about some ways to treat arthritis, and understand that when I say treat, I use that very loosely, okay? So a lot of times the treatment, especially when you go into your healthcare professional, is really a way to mask the symptoms. Okay, so it's not necessarily treating your condition where you're going to be pain-free for the rest of your life, but we're actually giving you the ability to get around, do the things you like to do with a lot less discomfort in comparison to your initial presentation. Now, masking the symptoms a lot of times can go with injections, as we stated, into the joint, and especially in the foot and ankle, where you start getting to the toes and the digits. That is a very, very small space. And a lot of times I tell my patients, you know, I'm taking a very small space and I'm now implanting more fluid into an area. And that sometimes that's not recommended. So just keep that in mind if there are smaller areas like fingers and toes that may be paining you. So an injection is one way. Obviously, anti-inflammatories are prescription medications that are available on the market. And sometimes I tell my patients, I'm like, look, if you're on it now and it alleviates your symptoms, then you'll be on it from here on out. Because once you discontinue the medications, a lot of times your symptoms may return. So keep that in mind when you're asking for pills. And that's not every inflammatory reaction. I'm speaking of specifically an arthritic condition in the joint. As we stated, there's an injection. There are medications. And obviously, there are offloading modalities like braces and prosthetics and things of that nature. And understand that when I stated that the joint is damaged, it's damaged. And so we'll get into some of the last resort, which I always tell my patients, is to surgically repair an arthritic joint. And, you know, in this area, you know, even with my own mother and father, you know, going to surgery, as I tell my patients, is always a risk. And it can turn out very pleasant a lot of times. But it is a risk, just as with everything. Now, some ways to regenerate cartilage is, and, you know, I had this conversation with my patients very frequently, is, as I stated, the cartilage, which is the cap on the edge of the bone, is something that the Lord gave you, and they gave you one. And so when it's damaged, a lot of times it's very difficult to regenerate. So some of the ways we do is, a lot of times we can take, at least surgically, we can take an instrument called a K-wire, which is a small, very, very, very thin rod, almost like the size of a toothpick. And you actually insert it, and you do what's called, it looks like a piece of mozzarella cheese once you're done. You actually take this K-wire and you drill holes into the actual cap of the cartilage, or what's remaining, or the actual edge of the bone. And a lot of times what will happen is you actually access those blood vessels in the bone, which then cause the blood vessels to bleed, and then the cartilage regenerates. Now understand, the cartilage that regenerates is not going to be the cartilage that you were born with. And so a lot of times I tell my patients, I'm like, look, although that's some, there is what scar tissue there now as a result that essentially fills into the area, it is not going to be 100% once you're completed. So you take this K-wire and you drill, and then as over time, there will be a regeneration of scar tissue based on the blood flow that comes into that joint now. There are also ways to replace with what we call, essentially, there are amniotic cells that are now grown. They can be taken from the patient's body and implanted into the cartilage. There's all kind of biocomposite tissues that can be placed on top of the edge of the bone, and it incorporates into the actual joint itself to regenerate the cartilage. And then lastly, there's a joint replacement. I can say joint replacements have gotten a very bad name, you know, in as of late, in or especially in the past few years, because the last thing I like to see or hear in my patients or especially on the in the operating room, I see the replacement to the replacement. And a lot of times we get joint replacements or some of my patients, and then they're like, it didn't work. They had to take it out. And, you know, that is a risk. As I stated, every surgery comes with some level of risk. But you can have a joint replaced. And the last portion is to fuse the joint. Now, once you fuse it, it is what it is. It's done. The position it's in is fused. It's not moving. And I can tell you that may be an option for some patients, especially my older patients who they're not very active. You know, they you want the pain gone, because if the joint is gone and it's not functioning, then it's not hurting. So keep that in mind, that there are some options for you in relation to the arthritic conditions that we suffer with. But I will say that the do not, in my opinion, as I tell my patients, if you have options, the last one is going to be surgery. And if you also have options in surgically, the last thing you want to do is fuse it. So when you go through several surgeries, that's the last door that you can go through. And until you get into that point, you haven't reached the last option. Now, as far as the arthritis, you have to understand that, like I said, the surgery, although it's beneficial, is still traumatic because you're opening a closed environment that was supposed to remain closed. And a lot of my athletes, they come in, they have ankle injuries from, I don't know, I jumped up one time. Even if you were a child and even if you were a teenager, you have to understand that joint has been through in a traumatic experience and as a result has become remodeled or exposed now. It's become compromised. Even something as simple as a bunion is an arthritis. I tell my patients this all the time. Although it's a bunion on your feet, it is still an arthritic condition. It is a joint destructive situation. So we've covered that during this time, and that's just one of the things that walks into my office more frequently during this time of year is actually an arthritic condition and just the aches and pains that go along with it. Now, moving on to another issue that definitely walks into my office and that I've seen so much of, more than I would ever like to see, is gangrene. During this time of year, especially as I trained up north, where, you know, there's this huge, homeless population in the area that, you know, patients who like to be outside or, you know, patients would come to the hospital and all their digits would be completely dark and black, or their toes would be completely dark and black. And as I've stated on the show before, you know, the actual lack of blood supply is a leading factor in this. And, you know, patients that come into my office and they're scared that they have gangrene because it's something that they've seen on the internet or something someone else experienced. And, you know, I have to sit there and have that conversation with them about what it is and what it is not. But before we get into that topic, I want to take a short break. As always, we have to pay the bills, and we will be back shortly.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
And welcome back. As I stated, I always like to listen to the music. I'm a big music fan. So it's always a pleasure to listen to the music as the music plays before we chime back in. As stated previously, we welcome all of our listeners, and this is a listener or patient-driven show. And we would love to take any questions, or I would love to take any questions that you have. This is Dr. Japera Levine, and I am a foot and ankle physician and surgeon here in Beaumont, Texas. And today's topic of the show is conditions that essentially come into my office during this time of year when the weather is the temperature has dropped. And we talked a little bit about in detail about some arthritic conditions and just the mechanisms of arthritis and some things we can do to alleviate your symptoms related to that. And now we've gone into an issue or topic, gangrene. And as I stated previously, I trained in both Boston and Chicago, and I lived there for many years. And it was very customary during this time of year to have people walk into the emergency room with toes black, feet black, digits black. I mean, just I can't believe how these people are able to get around and live like this. But, you know, these areas where it's very frigid outside, you know, they come in and their extremities are just, they're dead. That's essentially what a gangrene is. And, you know, I'm here to disprove any misconceptions as far as what gangrene is. You know, gangrene is something that looks like, I like to call it black licorice, okay? As if, you know, in the older days, we don't eat a lot of licorice now. However, licorice is, it's really shiny and black and really waxy, okay? The area that appears to be gangrene is, it looks what we call dusky. It's kind of a weak, looks sort of bluish. It can always look sort of bluish. It's very hard. You can tend to touch it and it doesn't move. And a lot of my patients, they come in and they say, "Do I got the gangrene?" I'm like, "No, you do not have gangrene." But we like to sit here and disprove any misconceptions and like to explain to them what gangrene actually is. You know, it is actually a combination of an infectious process with actually blood flow process or compromise. Because you have to understand that the dark area at some point has lost some sort of blood flow, okay? And as I have said previously on this show, the body will compromise the blood flow to the extremities in order to keep the actual body cavity warm, all your vital organs. You know, your heart, your lungs, anything that's in your cavity, your thoracic cavity, it will sacrifice the blood flow there in order to keep those things pumping and warm and nourished. And as a result, we'll compromise that blood flow, and then the digits, they start to die. And so what you'll see a lot of times is the blood flow is what we call shunted away from the extremities to back to the actual body cavity. And that lack of blood flow during that time, as I always say, the blood is like a car. It's like a van. It brings a lot of good, healthy nutrients to the actual structures in our body. And when you don't have that, then structures start to die. And that dying mechanism is what changes the color to actually a very dark, dusky, black appearance. And what happens is, well, there are two different types of gangrene. There's wet and there's dry. Now, understand that they are different. And the whole point is to not have your body go to what's called a wet gangrene. A lot of my patients, when I worked at the VA in Boston, my veterans, they would tell me, you know, stories about, you know, being in Vietnam, and, you know, they would have gangrene because they're out in very humid and wet environments, and those tissues are not able to dry out, and they would become exposed to some sort of bacteria, a viral or fungal infection. And as a result, those tissues would become infected. So not only do they not have the blood flow, but now you have a microorganism there. Now understand that the microorganism can be, like I stated, bacterial, viral, or fungal. And those changes, and that's why I'm always very aggressive in any diabetics who walk into my office and they look like they may have a fungal infection. I'm like, "No, honey, we have to cure that." Because the last thing I want is for you to get some sort of cut or opening. And now that fungus has a direct access to your soft tissues inside your body. So we need to be very aggressive at curing that. And so when you have an area that's wet or wet gangrene, it almost looks like there's a black area and then there's this clearing of red area that's directly beyond it. And what that is that's active bacteria feeding and living in an area. And the whole goal is to get that to dry out, because if it does not dry out, then that active bacteria is living and thriving. And so a lot of the times the goal when patients would come into the emergency room would be to make sure that those areas dry out and what we call is demarcate. That's a medical term for, you can almost see a very clear line between healthy tissue and dead tissue. And until it demarcates, that's when you know that infectious process has essentially quieted down. But in that area, if it's wet, the active infection and bacteria, and a lot of times, I don't know what is going on. I don't know if it's something that we are taught in medical school, but you go to the emergency room and the physicians or the nurses, they like to take a swab. Like, we need to take a swab or a culture. And that is probably the worst thing that can be done, because you have to understand that when you swab that area to try to actually put a person on antibiotics, you're getting a lot of different organisms. And so a lot of times we will chase organisms that are not actually involved in the infectious process, because we've just got a plethora of organisms that have now grown from swabbing the outside of the body. And so when you know that there is a bacteria or fungus there or something there, that you want to actually place the patient on broad spectrum antibiotics initially, so that you at least know you're killing something, okay? Now, you have to understand too that in the event, like let's just say you never went into the emergency room and the areas that are gangrenous, that are dry, are allowed to what we call demarcate. You know that your body has the ability to do what we call is auto-amputate. A lot of times my patients will walk in, especially when I lived in Chicago, they will walk in and they say, honey, I took off my sock and my toe was just sitting in the sock. So I do understand that the body has the ability to shed those actual areas and completely, they'll just fall off if they're dead and they have no use for them anymore. And so do understand that that is something that can happen. But the problem is a lot of times bone may be exposed, bone may be dead, and you want to actually deal with that, because otherwise that is an additional nidus or area of infection that may come to bite you later on. So when you have an area that is wet, like I said, you don't want to tend to swab. However, you do want to place this patient on antibiotics. Now, understand too, we are also dealing with the issue of blood flow. So your blood flow, which is there to get the antibiotic to the area that is infected, if it is compromised, you're understanding that the antibiotics may not even reach the area of concern, because those little blood vessels are not healthy enough to bring the actual antibiotic to the area. So keep in mind that we're fighting two battles: lack of blood flow and also an issue of infection. Now, you know, some things that we like to do in that is we want to make sure that we do wound care. That's always good. And we want to make sure that in the event that a surgical intervention is necessary, that we provide that the patient with that. We do have an actual caller here on the line. I'm going to bring you in one moment. Hi, Leonard.
How are you?
Hi, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Back in June, I had my eyes checked on an annual vision test.
Yes, sir.
And I need different prescriptions. I got some new glasses done.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the last 2 or 3 months, I've noticed that I can actually see better without the glasses at a distance. I still need them to see mm-hmm. books, computers, telephone books, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, driving down the street, mm-hmm. billboards, street signs, things like that, I can see better without the glasses than with the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible for vision to improve over time?
Now, I understand it depends on how the vision became compromised, okay? And your eye physician can definitely give you some sort of indication as to why your vision became compromised. I know that even with my own personal experience, sometimes you can see better at night than you can in the day. Sometimes you can see better at a distance than you can at far. And sometimes it may be caused by a astigmatism. Sometimes it actually can be caused, which is a shape or of the eye. And sometimes it can be caused by glaucoma or other diseases of the eyes. Now, and that's why I'm saying if it's a situation where there is a disease process that has affected your vision, there are times that the eyes, and just as well as any other part of the body, can regenerate and can do its body in repairing those processes. And so if you have to ask your eye physician, what is the leading cause of this, or what is the leading cause of my deterioration in eye? And so you may want to have that conversation with them. If you know, they may provide you with that information.
In my case, it's probably going to be diabetes.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was just concerned that, well, I was just wondering why my vision would seem to have improved, and I don't need the glasses as much now.
Well, I tell my patients all the time, you know, your body is an active process, And there are times, and like I state, that the areas can be repaired. It does not doesn't mean you'll be repaired completely. But, you know, once if you get your sugars under control and you're on a medication and you're watching your diet, you know, the body can regenerate some of those tissues, some of those blood vessels. And that may be the possibility with you. I mean, that's why we do the annual exam with your diabetes checkups annually, so that in the event that your vision does change or does improve, that you can obviously, you know, change your prescription on your lenses, and you can actually, you know, obviously don't have to wear them as much. Okay. Now, and we did have a conversation on the show about having diabetes is like having a piece of glass go through the body. It damages everything in its sight. And so if the reason why your vision has changed is because of the diabetes, and now you've done and followed and changed your lifestyle, then that is a possibility, what you're stating.
I intend to make an appointment to go see him and all that, but I just thought it was strange for the vision to improve.
Absolutely, and understand, I see that even in, you know, with other patients in other parts of their bodies, you know, they start to feel better, they start to get around better, and understand that is a viable option, is for the body to recuperate. So I'd be interested to see if that be your situation. And understand, even I've seen some of my patients, we talk about a lot of times, Dr. Levine and I talk about a gluten sensitivity. You know, the gluten that we eat, which is in a lot of our foods, is an inflammatory actual food in our diet. And a lot of times it can change the vision as well. And the gluten is in a lot of foods that we eat with high sugars and carbs, that even when you change those things, as you probably are with your diet, it can change the inflammatory reaction in the blood vessels in your eyes. I mean, there's a lot of things going on that if you're following your diet and your exercise regimen, that can actually improve. Doesn't mean it'll be 100%, but you'll notice that your body will start to display different things. So I'm definitely happy that you're able to get around better and your vision seems to be improving, and I hope that it continues to improve.
Well, good enough. I just thought it was unusual. I thought I'd call in.
Oh, it's not a problem. We welcome any calls that you have, and obviously for me, I definitely would like to hear whenever you do go back to the physician and have that conversation with them, to give us a call back and let us know what he actually said, he or she actually said.
Good enough.
All right, love. You have a wonderful weekend.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we thank Leonard for giving us a call in Houston, Texas. As I say, you know, I've talked plenty of times about the issues that a person has with the diabetes affecting their bodies, and it can be deleterious. It can be very difficult for the body to respond based on the lack of exercise and the diets that we choose to eat in this area. And vision is definitely one of them. I mean, those vessels in your eyes are very, very, very small. And, you know, when you start having sugars and high sugars that go in and destroy that actual those tissues, it can be very damaging to the area. So it's definitely imperative, and I would like to impress all of you to, if you are diabetic, please have your annual eye exams yearly so that you can determine if you have any damage related to your vision. The sooner you know, the actual better. It's like I said, we'd like to thank Leonard for giving us a call. We are coming on the last minutes of our show, and we're going to go ahead and close up with the topic for today. And that is essentially, we talked about both arthritis and both gangrene. And I just want to make sure that you are all are aware that gangrene is something that, as I stated, because it is a bacterial or some sort of microbial infection, and is also a lack of blood flow, that in the event you do need surgical intervention, that surgical intervention will be delayed until the blood flow is restored. Because I cannot go and open and cut open a patient unless you actually have blood flow to heal the area. You don't want to go and make more trauma to the body and then you don't have blood flow to heal it. Because that's how my patients end up with just one toe gone, and then they end up with the foot gone, and then the leg. And that is very rampant in this area. So keep in mind that in the event you have anyone who knows, you may know, that has this type of issue, please get to your physician or your healthcare professional immediately, because time is very precious is of the element to be able to get that treated as soon as possible. You also want to keep in mind that as far as gangrene is concerned, that area, it will start to look like a hard, dark area in the middle of what may be a wound. I always tell my patients, wounds need to look like ground meat. That's what the tissue needs to look like, real healthy ground meat before you cook it. When you purchase it actually in the store, it needs to look red and beefy. When you start to see something that's different, you actually want to get to your healthcare professional as soon as possible. That way you can have a conversation with them about what's going on. As I stated, antibiotics and wound care will be definitely a plus in dealing with anything of this nature. And I can tell you a lot of patients walk in with gangrene in my office. Not so much so here, but definitely I've been exposed to it more than I would like to care for. And understand that when you do, we just need to get you treated and find out why you do have that situation. I can tell you I've gotten into conversations a lot with patients, and they fight me a lot of times on this. I'm like, pumpkin, that's dead. That's going to have to come off, unfortunately. And, you know, it's like, well, we're just doing it at home. We're just going to dress it at home. I'm like, I understand that, but that's going to have to come off. And understand that is the worst part of my job. I love doing surgery. I'm trained to do surgery on the foot and ankle. But that is the worst part of my job, is actually walk into a room and tell a person, I'm going to have to take something off. The worst part. So we've come to the end of that topic. And, you know, one thing that I like to always tell my patients, another thing that walks into my office this time of year, are colds. You know, colds and flu season, which is a big deal right now. You know, when I lived up north a lot, there is actually a condition called seasonal affective disorder, where patients or people actually stay in. They're more prone to stay in. They're more prone to eat foods and high carbs and breads to make them feel warm and fuzzy inside. And there's also a component of that with depression. And not so much here, but up north, you know, the areas and the days are very dreary because it's snowing outside and there's no sun. And that is actually a diagnosed disorder. It's seasonal affective disorder. And with that, you know, keep in mind that a lot of people deal with colds during this time of year because they're actually inside more. And you're around people who are sicker and who have been exposed, and you're not outside breathing fresh air. So just keep that in mind during this time of year. If you haven't gotten your flu shot, please do so. You can go to the Minute Clinic. You can go to hospitals. A lot of times your insurance will pay for them. That way that you won't expose your microbial infection to someone else. And we're coming to the end of the show. I always like to thank all my callers and thank Dr. Levine as well as staff for allowing me to be here. And as always, he will be back next weekend to answer any medical questions that you have. Thanks, Leonard, for calling. And we pray that you have a warmer and a drier weekend. And we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. If you would like to contact Dr. Levine's office, call 347-3621. That's 347-3621. And thanks for listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI and on KLVI.com. We'll see you next week.
It's 9 o'clock at Southeast Texas' number one news source, KLVI.com and News Talk 560 KLVI, Beaumont, Port Arthur, Orange.